Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 9, Detachment from All That Is Material, Texts 19 and 20. Kevalatmanubhavena Swamayam Trigunatmikam Sankshobhayan Srijatyadau Tayas Sutram Arindama Kevalatmanubhavena Swamayam Trigunatmikam Sankshobhayan Srijatyadau Haya Sutramarindama Kevalatmanubhavena Swamayam Trigunatmikam Sankshobhayan Srijatyadau Haya Sutramarindama Vaishnavis. Kevala, pure, Atma, of his own self, Anubhavena, by the potency, Svamayam, his own energy, three, Guna, modes, Atmikam, composed of, Shankshobhayam, agitating, Srijati, he manifests, Adau, at the time of creation, Taya, with that energy, Sutram, the Mahatattva, distinguished by the power of action, Arindama, O subduer of the enemies, O subduer of translation purport by the disciples of His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Translation. O subduer of the enemies, at the time of creation, the personality of Godhead expands his own transcendental potency in the form of time and agitating his material energy, Maya, composed of the three modes of material nature, he creates the Mahatattva. Purport. The word Kevala means pure and indicates that the Lord's Kala Shakti, or time potency, is a transcendental energy non-different from his personal body. The Brahman addressed King Yadu here as Arindama, subduer of the enemies. This indicates that although the topic of Maya, or illusory creation, is being discussed, the king need not worry, because as a staunch devotee of the Lord, he is able to subdue the real enemies of life, namely lust, anger, and greed, which makes one a prisoner in Maya's kingdom. The word sutram indicates the Mahatattva, on which material creations rest, just like jewels rest on a thread. In the state of pradhana, or material equilibrium, the modes of nature do not interact. In the third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Lord Kapila explains in his Sankhya teachings that the Supreme Personality of Godhead agitates the neutral state of nature, and thus creation takes place. The created manifest form of nature in which the fruitive activities are stimulated is called Mahatattva, as indicated in this verse. If one tries to renounce the illusory creation of the Lord by taking shelter of impersonal Vedanta philosophy, thus artificially equating the infinite consciousness of the Lord and the infinitesimal consciousness of the conditioned soul, one's analysis will fall far short of reality. The word swamayam in this verse indicates that the illusory potency that covers the conditioned souls is always subordinate to the Lord, whose consciousness is infallible and infinite, and who is always a person. And we'll read text 20. Tamahustri gunavyaktim srijantim vishvato mukam yasmin protam idam vishvam yena samsarate puman. According to the great sages, that which is the basis of the three modes of material nature, in which manifests the variegated universe, is called the sutra, or Mahatattva. Indeed, this universe is resting within that Mahatattva, and due to its potency, the living entity undergoes material existence. Purport. The cosmic manifestation is a reality, because it emanates from the supreme reality, the personality of Godhead. The material world, however, is temporary and full of problems. The conditioned soul foolishly tries to become the lord of this inferior creation and becomes separated from his real friend, the Supreme Lord. In this state, his only business is material sense gratification, and his real knowledge is lost. Om Gyanatam Randishaginan Janasalakaya Chakshunitamina Tasma Shigurve Namaha Vanchakopa Chubhischa Krigasindhubhavacha Patitano Pavanebhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha. So in the last couple of verses, it was discussed the element of time, and basically destruction, the destructive nature of time. And we had a very nice class yesterday by Indra Dhunaswamy, who thoroughly discussed the time factor and how this is working against us all to break down everything within this material world, including our own bodies. So now, after discussing destruction, now creation is being discussed. So we've shifted topics here from destruction, now going to creation. And there's, first of all, a sort of discussion of how the basics of creation work in this material world. And I guess just to summarize that, first we have, it's called the unmanifested neutral state of material energy. This is pradhana. The swamayam, which is in text 19, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says that means pradhana. That's swamayam. Then the pradhana, which is really unmanifested, it's just sort of the, as I understand it, just sort of the raw material energy, you know, with no variegation, you know, with not a lot of distinction that's there. Then that pradhana becomes agitated by the glance of Krishna, and it's described that it's his chit shakti potency that agitates the pradhana, and that creates the Mahatattva. And the Mahatattva consists of the 24 elements, and it's also considered to be the product or the effect of three gunas, the three modes of nature. So now this is more the manifested stage of the material energy. Now that we've gone from the unmanifested stage, pradhana, to manifested, the Mahatattva, and this is when everything starts beginning to work. in this material world. It's described here that the Mahatattva is called Sutra. It's kind of an interesting word that is called Sutra, and Sutra, of course, means thread. We have another famous verse in the Bhagavad Gita, how everything... Sutra Mani Gana, yeah. But everything is strung on a thread. So this Mahatattva is this thread that's holding everything together in this material world. And through the interactions of the modes of nature, the three modes of nature, which are also, as it says, the product or the effects of Mahatattva, everything in existence is created. Lord Brahma uses material energy to create everything within the universe. So the material energy is sometimes manifest and sometimes unmanifest, but it is eternal. That was described here in this purport, that the material world is temporary, but because it emanates from the supreme reality, it is actually real. It is permanent in one sense and is temporary in another sense. In the Srimad Bhagavatam 3.10.13, referring to Kapila Dev's teachings of the third canto, which describe very elaborately this whole process of creation, it says this cosmic manifestation is as it is now, it was the same in the past, and it will continue in the same way in the future. So that's describing the eternal nature of Prakriti or material nature. Yeah, Prabhupada describes in that purport, says there's a systematic schedule for the perpetual manifestation, maintenance, and annihilation of this material world. It's stated in Bhagavad Gita, Bhuta 9.8, Bhuta Gramani Man Kritsnam Avasham Prakritir Vashat. As it is now created, and it will be destroyed later on, so it also exists in the past, and again will be created, maintained, and destroyed in due course of time. Therefore, systematic activities of the time factor are perpetual and eternal, and cannot be stated to be false. The manifestation is temporary and occasional, but is not false as claimed by Mayavadi philosophers. And that verse 9.8 that was referred to says, this whole cosmic order is under me. Under my will, it is automatically manifested again and again, and under my will, it is annihilated at the end. So we understand material nature is temporary in its manifestation. It's being created, maintained, annihilated in a cyclical fashion over and over again, but it is permanent in that the pradana, the material nature, is there eternally. And so therefore, we can understand that is directly under Krishna's direction in manifest and unmanifest. This is also, of course, further explained in the Bhagavad Gita introduction. Prabhupada has a nice explanation about the different elements, you know, the five basic elements of Prakriti, Kala, Karma, Ishvara, and Jiva. And he says that they're all eternal, but he says, of these five, the Lord living in the material nature and time are eternal, the manifestation of Prakriti may be temporary but not false. So in other words, it's not eternally existing exactly in the same way as the other elements, but it's not false, it is real, it is there, but it has temporary manifestations. He gives a nice example. He says, the manifestation of the world is not accepted as false. It's accepted as real but temporary. It's likened unto a cloud which moves across the sky or the coming of the rainy season which nourishes grain. As soon as the rainy season is over and as soon as the cloud goes away, all the crops which are nourished by the rain dry up. Similarly, this material manifestation takes place at a certain interval, stays for a while, and then disappears. So, we can understand that through this Mahatattva, the jiva, the living entity, undergoes material existence. This is described in text 20. It says, indeed, this universe is resting within that Mahatattva, and due to its potency, the living entity undergoes material existence. Now, this creation and all of its interactions and the jiva interacting, taking on bodies from this material world, it's also described by Vishvanath Chakravarti Thakur in the purport of this verse that this all comes about through a hankara. It's through the element of false ego interacts with material energy and everything is going. This is confirmed also going back to Lord Kapila's teachings in the third canto and Prabhupada's purport. This is 3.10.15. Of the nine creations, now, but basically this chapter, 10th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, describes the whole creative process and describes, I guess, nine different creations or nine different steps in how the material energy is manifest. So now this is the beginning. It says, of the nine creations, the first one is the creation of Mahatattva, or the sum total of the material ingredients, wherein the modes interact due to the presence of the Supreme Lord. In the second, the false ego is generated, in which the material ingredients, material knowledge, and material activities arise. So in other words, the presence of false ego, of ahankara, really begins the activity, all the material ingredients and activities begin. Prabhupada explains in the purport to that, the first emanation from the Supreme Lord for material creation is called Mahatattva. The interaction of the material modes is the cause of false identification, or the sense that a living being is made of material elements. This false ego is the cause of identifying the body and mind with the soul proper. Material resources and the creative capacity and knowledge to work are all generated in the second term of creation after the Mahatattva. So this ahankara is the point in which the pure soul enters into this material world. It's the first contact with matter of the jiva, is ahankara. And this is becomes our false identification with matter. So we take on the identity that we are this gross and subtle body. The material elements are there, the jiva enters into it, everything starts up, and with the false ego, one thinks one is material mind and body. The material mind and body are created accordingly. And of course, the other aspect of that is that means forgetfulness of Krishna. Because false ego, if I think I am this body and I think I'm this mind and I'm the controller of this body and I'm the controller of this material energy, it means that I have to become forgetful of Krishna. If I remember Krishna and that I am his eternal servant, then why am I here in this material world, you know, trying to enjoy all of these material elements with my material body and senses? So, in a sense, we are the creators of this material universe. Not that we are directly, we are indirectly, due to desire. In a purport to the Srimad Bhagavatam 10.87.26, these are the prayers to personified Vedas, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakura says, the total mind of the creation, which manifested Prajapati Brahma, who identifies with it as his body. In other words, Brahma identifies as whole creation as his body, in a sense, because he's the creator of it. And it's through the mind, he's saying. Since the economy of creation is such that no material body is created until some living entity wants to inhabit it. I thought that was a very interesting line. No material body is created until some living entity wants to inhabit. So in other words, unless we had the desire to a material body, there wouldn't be any creation. There wouldn't be any material bodies created. So we've come to this material world due to our desires to inhabit a body, to have this body for sense gratification, to enjoy separately from Krishna. And we could say the material world is then manifested due to our desires to inhabit these bodies. Now, of course, what happens once this process begins? Once we enter this material world through false ego, Mahatattva is agitated, three modes of nature are there, we take on gross and subtle bodies, then immediately, of course, as described in this purport, it says Lord, his only business is the material sense gratification and real knowledge is lost. So, you know, it's described that Maya has a throwing potency and a covering potency, right? We're thrown into this material world due to ahankara, false ego, desire to enjoy separately from Krishna. And then the covering potency immediately comes. Real knowledge is lost. And the cause of identification of the body, that we are this body, not servants of Krishna. So that's the state we find ourselves in the material world, which we find vividly described throughout our scriptures. You know, what happens to the living entity once we accept this body and mind. Now, in this first part of text 19, the purports describe how King Yadu was addressed as Arindama, or the subduer of enemies. And so it's described here, it says he needed not to worry about the force of Maya because he's a staunch devotee. And he would be able to overcome lust, anger, and greed. So in this case, the subduer of enemies, those enemies are lust, anger, and greed. Those material desires that keep us in this material world. So even though all of this is being described, King Yadu is being reassured that don't worry, this won't apply to you, since you're a devotee of the Lord, you are not going to be overcome by material energy, you're not going to be overcome by lust, anger, and greed. So, in other words, he is not subject to ahankara, to the false ego of thinking that he is the material body. And why? Because he is a devotee of Krishna. And a devotee is able to overcome ahankara, or this false ego, through knowledge. It's described that the mind that brings us to the material world can also help to free us from this material world. The mind is basically the best friend or the worst enemy. Bhagavad Gita 6.6 says, for him who has conquered the mind is the best of friends. But for one who has failed to do so, his mind will remain the greatest enemy. I think most of us can identify with this verse. Yes, the mind is often our worst enemy. And in fact, probably the mind is more of an enemy even than the senses, because, you know, all sensory information goes to the mind. The mind evaluates that, and the mind makes decisions. Well, actually, intelligence makes decisions about how to fulfill the desires of the mind. But the desires are there in the mind. So it's our worst enemy. But also, it can become our best of friends. How? If the mind, of course, is fixed in Krishna consciousness, is thinking of Krishna devotional service. In that purport, Prabhupada says, one who cannot control his mind lives always with his greatest enemy, and thus his life and its mission are spoiled. Now, it's interesting when you think about that. What if you had a, of course, devotees aren't supposed to have enemies. We have no friend, you know, we're beyond friends and enemies, of course, according to Prahlad Maharaj. But, all right, let's say we have an enemy, somebody we really, really just can't stand. We really don't like them, and it seems like this person, the reason we don't like them is they always are just causing us trouble. You know, they're simply a real pain, you know, and they're just bothering us eternally. But yet we, according to the Prabhupada, we're living with such an enemy of our own mind. Yet the uncontrolled mind is like living with that enemy. So as long as one's mind remains an unconquered enemy, one has to serve the dictations of lust, anger, avarice, and illusion. Those things that King Yadu is free from, those are the things that the mind agitates us with. But when the mind is conquered, one voluntarily agrees to abide by the dictations of the personality of Godhead, he who is situated in the heart of everyone as the Paramatma. So the mind is controlled by the intelligence, and that intelligence comes from Paramatma within the heart. Bhagavad Gita 10.10 says, Didami Buddhi Yogam Tam. Krishna says, I give the intelligence by which they can come to me. So that intelligence is given by Krishna, the super soul, the Chaitu Guru in the heart, so that we can overcome the mind. In a purport to Bhagavatam 4.21.36, Prabhupada says, there's a specific mention of the word guru, which indicates the Supreme Personality as Chaitu Guru. This is the Lord in the heart. Supreme Godhead is in his Paramatma feature, is present in everyone's heart, and he is always trying to induce the individual soul to surrender unto him and to engage in devotional service. Therefore, he is the original spiritual master. He manifests himself as spiritual master both internally and externally to help the conditioned soul both ways. So sometimes it seems like a very difficult process, and you see we hear these descriptions of the power of illusion, of the time factor, of the material nature, of the three gunas. How do we ever get out of this? This illusion is called the Hridaya Granthi, the knot in the heart, that which binds us to the material world, the false ego, the ahankara. But that knot is cut by knowledge, and that knowledge is given to us by Krishna is described here as the guru both within the heart and externally as the spiritual master. So good instruction is there for us internally and externally, but of course we have to take that and listen to it. And if we do, then that, you know, that that hriday granti, that knot within the heart, is lifted, is broken. And illusion is destroyed, and true knowledge is given. And that true knowledge, of course, is devotional service to Krishna. So not only is by knowledge we can understand devotional service to Krishna, but conversely, by the process of bhakti devotional service, one receives knowledge. Bhakti becomes the cause of knowledge as well. Srimad Bhagavatam 127 says, by rendering devotional service unto the personality of Godhead Sri Krishna, one immediately acquires causeless knowledge and detachment from the world. I've always thought it was interesting, it's described as, or translated as causeless knowledge. In other words, we didn't really do anything to, you know, to get this knowledge to be able to understand Krishna consciousness. Not something that we can do on our own. But we are given causeless knowledge through bhakti, a rendering service to the personality of Godhead under the direction of Guru. So bhakti must be there, devotion must be there, and of course in the beginning, the very beginning process of bhakti is faith or shraddha. So faith is also part of the process of acquiring this knowledge, which frees us from material energy. It's very important in our understanding of spiritual knowledge. In the Sutashvatara Upanishad 6.23, it said, only unto those great souls who have implicit faith in both the Lord and the spiritual master are all the imports of Vedic knowledge automatically revealed. So it's important that through devotional service that one gains faith, gains knowledge and attachment in the world, but having strong faith. In other words, Krishna is there internally and externally as Chaitanya Guru and externally as the Guru, but there must be faith in those processes. We have to listen to them. We have to hear them. We have to be attentive and take those instructions. And that means by having faith, by having strong faith in the words of Krishna, the words of the scripture, the acharyas, and Srila Prabhupada and our gurus. So, faith is important, and faith must lead to practical devotional service. You know, it's kind of like saying, as we so often say, I love Krishna, but I don't do anything. I have great faith in Krishna, but I don't do anything. You know, in other words, there must be practical devotional service. There's a expression. Is it from? It says that faith can move mountains. Is that from the Bible? Does anybody know? Nobody knows. No one knows from the Bible. Is it confirmed? Okay. I think it's from the Bible. That faith can move mountains. But there's sort of a corollary. There's an addendum that somebody added to that. I'm not sure where this comes from. And the sort of the extension of that expression is faith can move mountains, but don't be surprised if God hands you a shovel. So, yes, your faith can move the mountain, but Krishna may, you know, help you, make you help to do that. So we need to take up the shovel and work for Srila Prabhupada. It's not that everything is just going to happen automatically. It requires some practical service. Now, Krishna can do everything. Lord Chaitanya can do everything. Lord Chaitanya actually has already basically inaugurated the Sankirtan movement, assured its success for so many thousands of years in this golden age of Kali Yuga. It's going to happen. The spreading of Krishna consciousness is going to happen by the will of the Lord. So why do we have to do anything? Why are we so concerned about, book distribution and Sri Vrindavan is telling us to get books and go out to the tables, and why are we so concerned with, going out on Sankirtan on the streets and Harinam and Rathiatras and and distributing prasadam at Santa Fe College and the University of Florida, and all of these things that we're doing to try to engage the conditioned souls. Because this is Lord Chaitanya's process. Lord Chaitanya does not like wave his hand and everyone becomes Krishna conscious. Rather, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is working through his devotees. And by working through his devotees, he gives us the opportunity for service. Of course, he gives the greatest opportunity to his most dear pure devotees like Srila Prabhupada, who are given tremendous, tremendous responsibility. Srila Prabhupada definitely took up the shovel, and he did move mountains. He moved mountains to bring Krishna consciousness to this Western world, to give to all the non-devotees, people who have never heard of Krishna, had no background in Vedic culture, and, you know, similar. In fact, very steeped in sinful activities. So, yes, it was like moving mountains to bring Krishna consciousness. Others tried and they failed. But Srila Prabhupada succeeded. Yeah. And he did it, you know, and he did it through great effort. He gave great effort to his guru and to Lord Chaitanya and to Krishna, working tirelessly. Yeah. I was a... When Radha Swami was here, I was talking to him about this, about what Srila Prabhupada did and what he gave up. And Srila Prabhupada, I don't know if everybody fully realized, but you know, his health was not good. We thought of him as being this indestructible, you know, just, you know, larger than life figure. It's almost like he was immortal or something. But actually his body was very sick. He pushed himself tremendously, very little sleep, not eating much, you know, with all sorts of different ailments. You know, he had diabetes, he had kidney failure, and he had strokes, he had, you know, this was not, you know, the body, but yet what he did was amazing. And I've talked to his servants, you know, like Shruti Kirti and those who have been with him, they couldn't even keep up with him. You know, they had to, anytime Prabhupada would rest, they had to rest immediately because they knew it might be the only chance they'd get to sleep. And, you know, they were all sleep-deprived, even though Srila Prabhupada was, they were like 22 years old or whatever, and Prabhupada was in his 70s and not healthy, and just by the sheer power of Krishna and Krishna giving him the energy and his dedication and his devotion to Krishna, he was able to do amazing things and move mountains. And, you know, and he did. He was constantly working, translating his books all night, doing all of these things to bring Krishna consciousness. So I know that we sometimes become discouraged. Sometimes it seems very difficult. You know, it's not as though we're the majority religion in America or something, although many people are coming, many nice devotees are coming, but it is work. It's a struggle. It's a struggle to just keep everything going. And it's a struggle to increase what we're doing, and it's a struggle to bring more devotees and to keep those devotees. It all seems like a struggle sometimes. But this is our service. This is what we're being asked to do to assist Srila Prabhupada in his service to Krishna. And so therefore, just the effort itself is glorious. Just the fact of trying to make the attempt to please Krishna and please Lord Chaitanya gives great satisfaction to all of us, to devotees, and helps us to advance in Krishna consciousness. And primarily by this engagement, and Prabhupada engages us all the time. You know, Prabhupada was always pushing devotees, do more, do more, do more. Hey, that was really nice. Now double it, now increase it. That was Prabhupada's mood. Why? Because this restless mind, ahankara, the desire for the senses, all that is so strong that unless we are working really working hard for Krishna all the time, we are very likely to succumb to Maya, to the pushings of the three modes of nature. So the solution was to engage ourselves fully, the body, the mind, the words, everything, the senses in Krishna's service. I was thinking about, you know, when we were young, 40 years ago, 45 years ago, you know, we were very active and running all over, doing so many things, you know, I can look around the room and see many devotees who I know were very active. Some of you were out on Sankirtan every day. I think Kalyapani, weren't you the Sankirtan leader for all of England or something? We all did so many things. We worked so hard, for Krishna, and did so many things to spread this movement. And of course now, 45 years later, it seems a little more difficult sometimes, to do what we used to be able to do. But that's simply a matter of, and I'm speaking to myself here, preaching to myself, it's a question of shifting perhaps the focus of our service. It's not that we now stop doing service, but perhaps that service may be a little different as we age. Maybe it's more internal. Maybe it's more in doing other types of things that don't require quite the same bodily energy that we once had. But nevertheless, the consciousness must be there. The consciousness of being, of controlling the mind by the intelligence, by understanding this knowledge, and by trying to engage in whatever we can in practical devotional service is the way that we overcome this very, very strong material energy. Okay. So, we simply need to, pick up the shovel or at least pick up a teaspoon, yet the shovel's too heavy now, and, just to kind of continue to try to move these mountains to make the world Krishna conscious. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. So, are there any comments, thoughts, discussion? Jamastami?
The Buddha describes the importance of faith. And I'm wondering now, with your experience and realization, what are the factors that contribute to increasing faith, and what are the factors that contribute to weakening faith?
Well, one of the things that's mentioned often in our scriptures, and by Srila Prabhupada, is association of devotees, because we know that after Shraddha comes the Sadhu Sangha. So the association of devotees is kind of like the next step, and that will actually help increase our faith. Also, sometimes described that in the processes, the stage of devotional service as we go through, that each one can be considered to be a deepening of faith or an increase of faith. So all of those things that we do in devotional service, from sadhu sangha, from associating with devotees, to, of course, bhajan kriya, hearing and chanting, all help to increase our faith. Practical service. One thing that I've always found is as well, those things are very basic, of course. As we enliven one another, we assure one another, we preach to one another, we just give friendship to one another in devotional service. Therefore, that increases our faith. And I'm just pre-associating a little bit here, since that was a very broad, open-ended question. But the association of devotees is very important, and it needs to be a very positive association. So we have to be careful about how we associate with one another. In other words, the association we take so that will increase our faith, that it's good association, and the association we give. So that's something that actually to think about is, as I'm associating with people, with other devotees, am I helping them to increase faith? Chris, that's a very subjective thing. How are we doing that? No, but some of it is just a matter of friendship, of acting appropriately as far as the different classes of devotees. How we act with those that are on our level is through friendship. I remember when I first started doing the child protection office, I was at one of the really early Cooley Melas about in Los Angeles. I don't know, back about 2005 or 6 or something, many years ago. And I talked to this young man who had very bad experiences in Krishna consciousness in Gurukula. And this is many years later, and he told me how he had just completely gone away, and now he had come back. And I was very curious. I say, what was it that helped you to come back to Krishna consciousness after being fairly bitter and all that? And he said it was because of the association of devotees, that sort of, even when he was not necessarily in the best of moods, that they basically continued their friendship with him. And they sort of stayed connected with him. And through that, he eventually came back around more and more, and he was crediting a good association with restoring his faith. That. So anyway, that the way that we associate is very important, and that we really do try to encourage one another. Often, I know myself, we often don't think to just acknowledge the service that devotees are doing, the great service so many are doing, and to acknowledge one another and give some validation and some encouragement to one another. So we need to do that. And that really, really helps our faith. And of course, the real processes of hearing and chanting, you know, take place. Okay, I'm sorry, it's a long answer to a question. Brian.
It's a really nice answer. And just to echo from you, in Bhagavad Gita, you have it there. In the chapter 17, the last verse,
End of the purport, Prabhupada says how to achieve faith. Just clearly like that. He said, if you have it, just the last verse, Asraddha Hutam Dhattam, 17th chapter, last 28, text 28. Asraddha Hutam Dhattam, Tapas Tattam Kitan Chajat. The last paragraph, if you see, to achieve success, I think something starts like that. 18-28. The last...
Well, he says, to achieve a success...
Yes.
One must find the proper spiritual master and receive training under his direction. Then one can achieve faith in the Supreme. Yes. When the faith matures, in course of time, it is called love of God. This love of God ultimately is the ultimate goal of the living entities. One should therefore take to Krishna consciousness directly. So right before that, he says, okay, there's a process of gradual elevation if one by the association of pure devotees takes directly Krishna consciousness. That is the best way. So association with devotees, again, just as you're saying, Prabhupada's confirming, he mentions association of pure devotees too. So we want to get good association, certainly associate with Srila Prabhupada and our scriptures and pure devotees, but also all other devotees. Prabhupada, that is the best way to achieve faith. Yeah, thank you.
And the faith is love of God, in majesty.
As we said, Prabhupada said that will eventually manifest as pure love of God as that faith develops. Yeah, thank you. That was a nice reference. I remember that one. That was 1728. Yeah. Trivikram.
Well, so Tinkaram, Janamashri was asking what could contribute to weakening of faith. And so immediately what came into mind, I was thinking like bad association, those that are addicted to sense gratification, or ideologies or a philosophy that conflicts with our philosophy. Like for example, we have, you know, other branches in our movement that tend to work on the weak devotees, and then that weakens their faith and so forth. So I was thinking like this.
Oh yeah, that was the other half of the question, was what weakens faith. And of course, that's sort of the opposite of what strengthens faith. You know, if we don't have those things, it becomes weakened. You're right, bad, you know, not having good association, not good sadhana. I find often that people's faith is weak. Often they're not chanting the rounds. Sometimes something as simple as that, you know, can strengthen the faith. Right? Anything on the lady's side? Ragatmaka, you haven't said anything yet. So, Mother Ragatmaka.
Of course, fault finding. If we're associating with anyone, or our own mind is finding fault or wanting to be, to hear even criticism and fault finding, then one's faith is definitely weakened.
Yeah, you know, and I was thinking that's such a difficult one now, because criticism and fault finding is just all around us. And if you open your computer or your phone or whatever, you're going to find so much of that. Fault finding, criticism, even aparad, you know. And yeah, if we engage in that, certainly that's going to be a loss of our Krishna consciousness and loss of our faith. But as you said, even hearing too much of it, it starts to get into one's consciousness. So one has to be really careful. That's a good point. Okay, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Thank you very much, Jaya Prabhu.
Thank you.